to the edge of this. Maybe I will never quit. Right, cause you're feeling it. Push it, push it, push it.
Hello, this is Women Who Race, Lost Dots podcast, where we spotlight the women in our races and aim to inspire and encourage more women in the sport to try racing for themselves. Lost Dot are the organizers of the Transcontinental Race, the Trans Pyrenees Race, and the Accursed, and we run beautifully hard, self-supported bicycle races across Europe. I'm Taylor Doyle. Welcome back to part two of our conversation with Transcontinental Race experienced riders Gail Brown, Cara Dixon, and Katie Moss. It is story time. If you missed part one, definitely go and listen to that. I wouldn't want you to miss out on some of the magic in there. In part two, we get into some real storytelling moments, so grab a brew, get comfy, and get ready to be enlightened and entertained as riders rehash their best and worst moments from the road. The ecstatic highs and sullen lows, moments of being wholeheartedly proud of yourself, dealing with disappointment, and just general raw advice for taking on a race like the TCR. We bring the hype women out of Cara, Gail, and Katie and ask them what they'd say to someone who's on the fence about signing up. This comes at a time when applications for TCR number 10 have been extended for underrepresented groups, and we hope to inspire more folks to consider signing up with real-life stories shared here and the lessons learned along the way. Let's get right to it. Thanks for listening. I think it's time to just ask how your TCR experiences were. What did it mean for you and how did you find it?
We both looked at Cara like it felt like it was an
interview. That feels so bad.
TCR experience was not as long for me as a lot of other people's. I think I did 6 days before I ended up scratching. It was absolutely incredible, the bits I did do. There was massive highs, massive lows, met some incredible people, some amazing friends who I'm still good friends with today. And yeah, it was something like throwing me right in the deep end, out of my comfort zone.
Did you know people in the sort of long distance racing world even listen to beforehand?
Not particularly. No, I didn't have any friends who did. I didn't involve myself much in the cycling community back home.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like it wasn't welcoming, but I was doing everything like a cheap bike, and it was very raw in North Yorkshire. So there were a lot of cyclists, but they were a lot of dentists and really wealthy people on these insanely expensive bikes who were really fast. And there's me on my cheap old Giant or something, which had probably more miles than their bikes ever did. But so I didn't know many people in cycling before that, but leading up to the TCR, I did get a bit involved in Facebook groups and stuff. So I'd following some people on Strava, joined the Strava group and everything. And that kind of pushed me a bit because they have, on Strava groups, they have the little leaderboards that said how it's cycling. And I was trying to keep myself at the top every week, which was completely, again, useless in regards to the race. But when comparing myself to people like Ulrich or somebody, I was I've done more than him this week and I've done more than him next week or something. And I was just that was sort of a goal of me, because especially seeing as I was in that group for 2 years before the race actually started. I did meet people through that, and people would follow me on social media and stuff. Yeah, so I started to talk to people. I met some friends online, chatted to them on Instagram and everything, but nobody in real life really gave me any advice.
It is amazing. I've met so many good cycling friends through Instagram first. And then in real life, when I met them, it felt like it was I had before. What I'm super interested to hear from you more about is the scratch aspect of your TCR experience and how that was, and sort of expectation, potential letdown, but also is a fear of scratching or failure, quote unquote, is that a reason
you know, not to sign up? What is that fear?
Well, I mean, for me, it was like, obviously it's a massive thing entering one of these races for everybody. But I think I had put so much like confidence in myself, in the fact that I did lots of cycling. I had a lot of people who had a lot of confidence in me and were going into it like big expectations, which were kind of unfounded because I had no experience in the racing beforehand. So I had built myself up so much for this race, and like it kind of mentally, after I scratched, after I got home, that mentally affected me for quite a while, especially after like I then also entered the GB Giro like 2-3 weeks later and then scratched from that as well, because surprisingly I hadn't healed from my injuries in the TCR in 3 weeks. But yeah, so like the rest of my year almost was sort of like aimed around the TCR, which is usually quite late in the year. It's like it was like August or something, so I hadn't done any races before that. So after I'd done that and injured myself, it sort of, there was a big sort of mental hit to me after quote unquote failing something, because I had built myself up so much for it. But again, that's a personal aspect to it. Like a lot of people would have been super proud to have got to where I got, and especially like how I was doing when I did scratch. But yeah, it took me a while to sort of bounce back from that. But no, I definitely don't think it's a reason to not sign up, because doing the race itself, just getting to the start line, or doing like a few days, or like just cycling across a country or something, is just like some absolute incredible achievement that 99% of the people in the world never do.
In retrospect, do you feel like you'd be more equipped to deal with that now? Like, do you feel, and has it been sort of put into perspective?
Definitely. I mean, I can't say much more experience, because that was my first ever race, and that was in 2022, and it's now less than 2 years after I've done that. But in the past year, the amount of like lessons I learned from the TCR, like the TCR itself has given me so much experience to build on. And last year was like the most successful year for me, like cycling wise, and I mean just life wise in general, but like cycling wise, I was so proud of myself at the end of last year for what I'd done. And that was all built off the TCR, basically, as my first race, and like where I learned what not to do.
That's so cool. I think it's really cool. And like, what? You had that experience, yeah, but starting. Then you've like learned so much from it, and then you're only going to grow from it. Like, I think that's such a great thing to have not got disheartened.
Yeah, and also the same way that there are so many things that could happen on the race that are completely out of your control, and then you sort of have to go into the race with a little bit of an open mind about what's going to happen. Because,
for sure.
Which I completely agree with you. It's this big moment in your year. It's a lot of time. You take a lot of preparation financially. It's a commitment as well. But you do have to have an open mind, because there's so many things that happen on the road.
Like the journey of preparing for the race is kind of what it's about as much as the race itself. I definitely always keep that in mind, because what I worry about most is riding off. Like when I first started Highland Trail, I was so worried that I'd like cycle off and fall immediately off my bike and just have invested all that time. And I was like, well, then you have to trust that the process of preparing is worth it. Should I go for my TCR experience?
How have your experience?
So it really was a shift, like a complete shift in my life doing this race, from being quite stable for a number of years. I had like a very stable healthcare job. I work as a physio. I'd been doing like my rotations, which is what you do when you first qualify. So you bounce around lots of different specialties, like learning how to do different types of physio. Which had been a great, sturdy, stable base to prepare from. So obviously I could have a huge amount of consistency. I had like a steady income. And so there was a lot of benefits of having that stability. But then to do this race, I actually left that job and then had this kind of big Europe adventure as with TCR just as a part of it. So I think I was in a really good mindset for this race. I'd had that amazing preparation and then kind of was on this adventure. So I was like so up for it. And I also had nothing planned for afterwards, just like to carry on my adventure in Europe. And I think that was a huge psychological benefit as well, to have like knowing that no matter how long I took or, you know, if it all went wrong, I would still have that time out in Europe. So I kind of had this, and I don't think I've ever quite had that same mindset since. I was just like well up for seeing whether I could do this, because this was my first race as well. And I was there to race. I think I have shied away maybe in the past from saying that I'm competitive, but by doing these races, I'm learning so much about what competitive means to me. And I very much now believe that competitive to me doesn't mean trying to win. Although obviously I'm trying to do as well as I can, the best I can do. And I'm using the race and the people in the race to like help me draw that out of myself. Like that's really important. If I was just doing a tour, then I wouldn't be getting up at, you know, stupid o'clock in the morning to see how much I could ride that day. So I need that to draw this kind of element out of me. But yeah, it doesn't matter where I come. That's not where the value is. But that's what I've learned now. But when I was doing TCR, I couldn't have explained that to you. Like I would have been like, oh, okay. I'm just here to see if I can do it. I wouldn't have like been able to say that I was like there to see what I could draw out of myself and explore what I could do. So yeah, set off way too fast. I like totally get you, Cara.
It's really hard not to though, because everyone just like barrels off the start line. Yeah. I don't know if it was that on your...
We started in Gerardsburg, and it started on the Murph, which is that really famous cobbled climb. And the start line of that race was absolutely incredible.
Buzzing. It was so good.
The entire town was out with like paraffin torches all lining the climb. And it was, it started like 10 p.m. Was that 8 p.m. or something? It was dark.
Yeah. It was such a spectacle.
The noise, the people cheering, it was like, it felt like I was like a professional cyclist basically in a race. So of course I went too hard, and I was like riding alongside Fiona at the time, so I was like, gotta put a shell here,
which is actually the complete opposite. So you know, perhaps this comes back to that whole believing in yourself thing, but for me, and actually I remember it was the same in the Germany race where we had a kind of gravel climb or something right at the beginning. I was like, no, I am sitting back, I don't want to, I'm not going up front, I don't want to be falling on the cobbles. And then you know, it was all take it slow, take it easy. And actually, that was very much my mindset for the race, which was do not go too hard at the beginning. Well, I've never, I don't think I've ever had that problem, because for me, it's about the endurance aspect, because I know that I wouldn't be able to maintain that sort of pace. And also the 10 p.m. thing is interesting. Maybe we'll get into that foreign conversation too. But
that's so interesting, because that's exactly the mindset I wanted to take into it. But then we started actually in the morning, which suits me so much better. And it was this amazing sunrise. So it was started in Bulgaria in Burgas, like on the coast. And it was just one of those beautiful, like golden, amazing sunrises. And we started off, it was quite flat, wide open road. And we were all like riding, obviously, across Europe, and we were just all like floating along on this amazing smooth tarmac road. And so obviously we're all, well, not obviously, but we were all going at like 35k an hour, and I was like, I don't think I've ever ridden this fast, like, you know, normally. So yeah, it was hard not to get drawn into that and not to kind of try and move with that energy. But so the first day I 100% overcooked it, and ended up feeling a little bit woozy. There was, the first checkpoint was actually quite close to the start, so it was up on this amazing kind of monument, big climb, and I got to the top of there and thought, Gail, you are going to have to race this race differently, like you can't maintain this is stupid. And I ended up going down into the town below there, and I got myself a little apartment. I kind of booked it on booking.com just that day, and then I went to Lidl's and clip-clop round Lidl's in my cleats and bought a frozen pizza. I cooked frozen pizza. I should have said there was a washing machine in the flat, and I washed my shorts that evening. And then I sat in bed and I was like, I just don't think this is the way that you're meant to do this race. So from then it was like a learning experience. Every day I'd be like, okay, we'll work on this efficiency thing, like we'll build up from here, and I did. And the journey of the race for me was so special. You know, I did make mistakes all through it, but I found in myself this version of me that I'd not met before. And it was really cool to kind of have that getting almost bigger and bigger, and finding out that I could go to bed and have 4 hours sleep and then get up the next day and ride these insane distances that I'd never actually done before. The longest ride I'd done before the race was 300Ks. And then the last day of the race, I rode 500Ks through the night into a huge storm. You know, like this kind of insane superhero version of Gail that I'd not met before. And to have those experiences, yes, interspersed with like stupidity and silly mistakes. But I think the beautiful thing about having races this long is that you can make those mistakes and then kind of figure it out and try and work it out. Not always, but certainly in my experience, that's like a part of it that I enjoy. Like when I've maybe messed up or done something stupid, I can just try and reset, you know, like booking a hotel way off the route and being like, oh no, now I have like another extra sort of 15k each way to cycle, like what are you going to do about it, that sort of stuff. Or like, yeah, making a mistake about what you're wearing or maybe resupply, those sorts of things you can reset and figure out.
Yeah, all about overcoming.
Yeah,
it's kind of like what we were talking about earlier, where people who are, you know, not sure of their abilities, and specifically women who are more quick to doubt them and be unsure of them, especially women who are like adventure inclined, I feel like they just so owe it to themselves to, if they have that fire inside of them that they want to push themselves, like, you know, we just so owe it to ourselves to find out if we can, because those experiences are just like absolutely life changing. Like, yeah. You said you met another Gail. Amazing.
But what I'm learning is though that version is transient and it's not always there. I wish she was, but what I like is that when I go and explore by doing these races, I find those different versions of myself that when I'm doing my normal day-to-day, I can't access because of all the other life crap that you have on a day-to-day basis, and these like spaces where you are just focused in on a really set goal and you have that much more mental freedom because you're just like focused in. Yeah, it's amazing what you find out about yourself.
And yeah, I mean, like, definitely she's not always there, but it also is amazing that the moments where it does translate into other areas of life with confidence and sort of, yeah, things that you wouldn't think of cycling in that moment necessarily, but you've had strength that you've cultivated and other sort of in your past.
So. Absolutely.
Is there anything else that you wanted to share, Gail, about your TCR experience? Like, how was your finish moment? Because, I mean, it was such a big deal, when you finished.
So As I said, I rode through the night, and I was pretty tired by this point, obviously, because I had this amazing, maybe day 9, day 10, where I had this insane resurgence of energy, and I felt like I was cycling the best I think I've ever cycled. You know, beautiful area of Switzerland and through the French Alps. I think if the race had ended at checkpoint 3, which was just like after this cool descent in of Alpe d'Huez, I would have been pretty happy to finish there. But no, I had like over 1,000 Ks still in France. So yeah, I definitely felt that last stage was one of the most challenging in a different way from the physical and mental fatigue. So yeah, rolling into Brest didn't necessarily feel triumphant. It was more like a kind of roll in through this. It was an epic storm, to be fair. It like was that kind of rain that is just funny because it's so heavy. It's just so bad.
Really wet rain, eh?
Just so bad that you're like, I can't even be like pissed off at this rain. It's just like hilariously bad. And yeah, you know, like headwind, just all the sort of rain, all the sort of crazy elements that you could think of. And then coming into Brest, it did subside. And I had this really amazing emotional feeling of like, you've done it. And that, like, well, I think maybe I knew that I would. That's unfair from a couple of hundred k's out, I was like, no, I've got this. I can do this. And that's what made me ride through the night. And so I rolled into where the finish, the GPX swell finished, and I looked round and there was just like nobody there. Actually, to be fair, there was one of the guys who I'd met in Burgas. He did like leap out of a vehicle and be like, Gail, Gail, you finished, like, congrats. But like then I had to go round the side of a building, and then there was the finish in the youth hostel in Brest. So it was like, it was a really special finish. My partner was there, which not everyone can say that their partner would meet them at the end. And that was, you know, he was a huge part in why I'd done the race in the first place. So to have him there at the finish was great. But I can't explain how these finishes are often quite anticlimactic. Like it's almost part of when you sign up to this, you need to understand that there won't be a medal and a, you know, a goodie bag. It's not that you do it for. It's that real sense of accomplishment that kind of seeps in slowly during the race, but then at that finish line as well, you get the, I guess, yeah.
Also more afterwards as well. Like thinking back to a race that, thinking of races I have finished, like months afterwards or just weeks or months afterwards, thinking back to the finish is a lot bigger than it was the actual moment you finished. Yeah.
Definitely. I totally agree. Yeah. So I'm not quite sure I've summed that up well.
But... You did. It was so, you had so many beautiful nuggets in there. Honestly, I have some goosebumps going. Thank you, Gail.
It's okay.
Katie, do you want to talk about your pairs experience on TCR?
Yeah, absolutely. And it is interesting. I think I'll come to the finish. Or maybe I should talk about the finish at the beginning, because actually it's something I tussled with over the race of, really, what I was thinking was just take each day as it comes and don't set yourself too many goals or aims too far ahead. And I almost didn't want myself to think about what it would be like to finish, because there were so many things that could have happened along the way. So you sort of, in a way, you do want to think about the finish and imagine it. But then at the same time, the race is so long that it's, I found it more helpful just to think about the kind of shorter term, whether it was a checkpoint or whether it was getting to a certain place, and just taking it as it came. But it's such a difficult thing to sum up, especially when you're riding for 16 plus days. And I remember getting to the end of the race and starting to tell a story about something had happened. I think it was to do with a Miracle Bakery that was open earlier than it said it was going to be, so we got coffee and pastries. And then I turned to Joe. I was like, wait, did that happen on the race, or did that happen a couple of years ago? Like your sense of time is just completely warped, because you're traveling such ridiculous, in some ways, distances every day, and traveling through multiple countries every day, and it really does just totally bend all sense of time and space. And that's probably partly because you have very few things to do. It's ride your bike, make sure you drink and eat, and find somewhere to sleep. Looking back, and it is a remarkable thing to cross an entire continent in that short space of time, and the things you see you can barely summarize. And I think one particular kind of that really putting it in context was when we were looking at the bit of the route in the Alps. And normally you think about the Alps as this vast mountainous landscape, which of course it is, but actually when you then do cycle through it in such a quick time, it puts the mountains in perspective in the same way that it puts the continent of Europe in perspective in some ways, because it's so manageable in a weird way. Even when you look at a map, it maybe isn't, but I think there's something about riding your bike through it, of feeling every, and this is, we definitely felt this on our tour in Asia, but it's kind of heightened, I suppose, when you're cycling faster and faster. But you just get a sense of everything. You get a sense of the entire continent being in such a short space of time. And it's phenomenal for that reason. And you can have highs and lows in a day. You can have highs and lows within half an hour of each other.
You literally.
It's just bizarre when you look back at it and think about it in that way. I think one of the really big things for me, I mean, a particular high, and Montenegro for some reason just really sticks out. The Dermatol National Park, which is so where beautiful. The checkpoint, the third checkpoint was. was just phenomenal. Mm. But actually that day was probably our shortest day. We probably should have gone and served. And while it was my favourite day, it was probably the worst morning we had over across the entire race because we'd tried to push. I think what we haven't talked about sleep, maybe not something we do want to pick up, but we had tried to condense our sleep. So we averaged about 4 hours sleep a night, which is definitely not enough for me, I think, full stop. But, you know, for some reason you kind of manage it just about. But we decided to see what would happen if we had 3 hours sleep. Maybe that's not something we should have tried out on the race itself. So woke up feeling very groggy, but you always feel groggy anyway. And you just think, oh, if I get on the bike, it'll be fine. And kept going and just really trying to push through it. And I just couldn't really move. And it was really frustrating for Joe because it was cold. The sun hadn't risen and I wasn't moving fast enough. So you weren't warming up. And eventually we just sort of, as soon as we saw, we came around a bend in this valley and the sun was on the side of the road and we just slept on the side of the road for an hour. When that time would have been far better spent just in the hotel that we'd paid for the night before. So that's how the day started. And then we got to a supermarket in this coal mining town, and it's that there are ultra cycling memes about this sort of stuff, but got to the supermarket, did our sort of supermarket sweep as you always do, got to the queue, and then in front of you in the queue is this trolley full of beer. And they were putting them through individually. It wasn't like I've got 10 of these or 20 of these. They were putting every single beer through the till individually. And you just think, oh, here goes another however long. But so, yeah, Montenegro was probably a highlight just for the landscape, I suppose. But as I say, it's hard to sum up. And for us, the beginning was very familiar and we were crossing routes that we'd done previously, particularly in Germany. And it was so fun and through the Alps and a couple of places in Slovenia as well. And it was just really fun to sort of cross these old routes that you know you've done and then sort of keep going.
So at the beginning, you said that you weren't really sure if you could finish, or you actually kind of didn't believe you could, right? That's what you said.
Yeah.
What was there?
Or at least I didn't. It's hard because in a way I proved myself right. I didn't think I would be able to finish within the time.
Oh, okay. And then you were that.
And we didn't. But I still don't feel actually that disappointed by that, because when we actually were there doing it and I knew that I was pushing myself as hard as I could, and as I say, we tested the sleep thing and I couldn't go with less. We were napping by halfway through, at least a week into the race. I was definitely napping at least 15 minutes a day where it just got too much, where I just had to. And I'm not a napper. I'm not someone who's ever been able to just lie down and go to sleep. And it's incredible how quickly your body just goes. I mean, you can almost feel yourself just like fall into the ground and you can fall asleep absolutely anywhere. So the sleep thing was a real big thing for me. And we did test it, but just so we didn't ride through the first night. We decided, or we made a decision before the race, that we weren't going to ride through the night. In hindsight, that might not have been the right one, because actually we only cycled something like 70K and then found a hotel, and then neither of us actually could get to sleep because there's so much adrenaline, as you were saying, from the beginning of the race. There's so much energy that actually we probably could have kept going, but there weren't that many options between that place and the next, wherever it was. And I've never ridden through the night. And still something I'm really keen to try, but it was certainly not something we wanted to try on the race itself. We had each other to kind of sense check with. But then that's also the hard thing, is if one person's ready to nap, the other person might not be, and you've got to make sure you're slightly in sync about these things.
That must be so hard. I think riding as a pair would be so challenging. Yeah.
People often say that, but I just have so much respect and so much admiration for those people who ride it solo. I do think psychologically, to be together and to know how we function, obviously, as a pair, and how to understand when it's each person's moment to try and bring the other one up. So if one person's sort of in a bad mood or tired or hungry, the other one kind of jumps into gear and sorts out whatever the problem is, and you can kind of bounce off each other like that in a way.
So do you think it's maybe a good spot for certain beginners to try a pair first?
For sure,
depending on
if you can find someone who you are more or less on the same page with, I would say that if you've got any hesitation about doing this alone, do explore that option, because it's really fun. I mean, you're it's a really excellent thing to do, and it's actually something we were so pleased about, was it's something we can actually share with each other. And in a way, it's a shame that you have this incredible experience, but then sometimes it is on your own. Obviously, it comes with all the other benefits as well. I think something also towards the end of the race, and something that a lot of people experience, is sort of like stomach issues and actually how well or not you're consuming food. So if I actually started feeling, I had a bad stomach from about 10, 11 days into the race. And also when we're here talking about women racing, my period actually came quite a few days early, unexpectedly as well. And I wasn't then prepared for that, so I had to find a service station, like find tampons, you know, that sort of thing. You're still having to contend with those things. And I couldn't fake, I mean, nothing. I mean, I don't know if it was just because we were in the Balkans and also we're vegetarians trying to find food without meat. Nothing appealed at all for like the final 5 days of the race or so. And it really was a kind of daily struggle to try and like find food that you actually wanted to consume, because obviously you need it, otherwise you're not going to go anywhere. And actually the penultimate day, talking about sleep, it was Joe's job to put an alarm on. He forgot. not that I could blame him for that, but we slept a couple of hours extra. We'd done all the sort of calculations of which ferry to get, because between Romania and Bulgaria, there was a ferry and there were only certain times. And so we had missed the ferry we were going to get with the timing, and we just did it. It was about 180K. So it wasn't very far. It was sort of one of the shorter, you know, it was 180K. Got to the ferry. I was feeling really ill, like sick. It was really hot. And we got some food, crossed over the river, and then got into Bulgaria. And we were walking around a supermarket, and I just couldn't. And Joe, it was quite, again, you know, this is the moment where being in a pair probably is quite frustrating, because actually there's so little you can do in those circumstances. And I just had to be sick, actually, it turned out. And we had 300 kilometers to go. We had sort of toyed with the idea of like, let's just see how far we can go this tonight and then just do the rest of it the next morning. Bear in mind, that night was the cutoff for GC finishing. And actually, having been sick, it was just pointless to think that we could kind of keep pushing, and it just didn't seem sensible. So we got some actual food with a fork, which was like a rare treat. I mean, still take away, you know, but it was just the manner of actually eating something with a fork rather than just using your hands to eat. And then like got an early night and then got up at 1 a.m. or something the next morning, or midnight or something, to then do the final 300 kilometres in one go. And actually the final day as a result was amazing. Even though the day before, so many people had messaged me saying like, you're almost there, you're so close. Mm. Like it's just literally, you know, and obviously if you're looking at the map, and looking at our dots and looking at it relatively speaking, yeah, we were really far through and we only had 300 kilometers to go, but actually that 300 kilometers actually felt almost further than the entire rest of the race at that stage, because I was feeling so ill, because I was feeling so low on energy. But then we woke up the next morning and there was something about those morning hours when it was dark that I absolutely loved. It was like quiet, there was very few people on the roads, and it just, again, it was, you didn't really have much sense of space. And you could just go and go and go. And so it was always really satisfying to think, oh, we've ridden 150K by whatever time in the morning.
I love that. It's like the stolen hours. The morning before the morning, where you can cruise some Ks and then you get the sunrises. It's almost like the morning starts again.
Then, yeah.
And then you're like, oh, I've already done you know, an amazing amount already.
Yeah. And the finish line for us, actually, because we knew obviously there wouldn't be an official finish or stamp or anything at the end, so I wasn't expecting anything, but actually it was so lovely because loads of the people we knew, you know, friends from before, but also people we'd met on the race who were still in Burgas at the end, all came out and like, you know, were there with beer, and which was amazing. And as you say, it's, you can't fixate on that ending.
What was the highlight from it, from the whole race looking back?
The whole thing. I mean, you can't put it in what you can't. So you can't hard to pick. It.
I have like gems, but I couldn't tell you the highlight.
Like with races, you have like, oh, if I remember that view or something. Or just part of it. You cycle, but that's
it's when you just feel like you're just go. You know, you're just.
It's like, the unstoppable feeling. Mm. That's the highlight. I had it going through Switzerland, and it was like a really beautiful weather day, and
it was Sunday and it was really quiet, and I just felt like the whole of Switzerland was out doing exercise. It was lush, like really beautiful, all the beautiful lakes up around Zurich and down, and just having the power in me on day like 9 or 10 to ride 390 something K. That's crazy, that feeling that strong that far in, I think.
Actually, I think I do have a time that I remember being my high point where I felt physically sort of like the best. I don't know. It was like 4 days into the race. It was whenever I think it was quite early on. It was probably like third day into the race. It was going through the Czech Republic, where it did start off on a bit of a low point. It was cold, it was rainy, had a long descent, got really cold at the bottom and had to like drive in a Tesco's. But then we started this parkour, which was like climbed out of the clouds into forests and like some amazing scenery. And then I started passing people, because like obviously everyone's on the same route then, because you all have to do this parkour. And so I saw somebody in front of me. I was like, I'm going to pass them. And then I did. I called them and passed them. And it was sort of the terrain I was used to. Like, it was very similar to, like, the terrain I sort of started cycling around, like, lots of short, sharp hills. So I was doing really well. I was so proud of myself. And then I got to the town at the end of the parkour and was like, wait, wasn't there supposed to be a checkpoint? And what I had done, I had ridden straight past the checkpoint. I know quite a few
people. You weren't the only one, yeah.
I know quite a few people did that. And so I'd gone from this like incredible high point where I was like so proud of myself to in tears at the side of the road, knowing I'd cycled 100K past a checkpoint. And I mean, at that point, it took me a while to sort of like, I sort of like just was a bit beside myself. And I eventually just sort of decided that I was going to carry on, do it just as a challenge, like not race it and still sort of race it for myself. But like I knew, I don't think I could mentally face going back to the checkpoint and having to do the rest of the parkour again. Because it was like, yeah, it was still a lot of short, sharp climbing, which was quite hard on your legs and everything. So I just thought, I'm just going to carry on with the race. Like the checkpoint wasn't far off. It's not like I skipped out a load of bit. I did the same distance everyone else did. I just didn't go into that building. So I basically decided I was going to carry on with the race for myself and just do the route. Mm. Like, what are they going to do? They're not going to stop you.
Those decisions are like really when you like take control over what the experience on your bike is for you and what you want it to be, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. And speaking of going back, I mean, I feel like it's always our job to maybe tell the story of other people, but there was one phenomenal story of Lizzie Jenkins who... it just did such a phenomenal race same year as we rode the fourth parkour in Romania, so TCR number 8. It was actually, talking about highlights, it was a real highlight for us. We had incredible weather. We were totally prepared for the gravel. We were expecting it, wanting it. It was off the road, so we were delighted. And we really, really enjoyed it. But we were also very fortunate, and we had planned it specifically not to be at night. But... Lizzie, I think the night before she was meant to be doing the parkour. So it's the highest road climb in Romania. And she'd gone up, then you have to go down to the checkpoint, then back up to the top where the start of the actual parkour section was. And she'd started the parkour section and kept getting punctures. I hope I'm getting the story correct. But what happened was she realized she was not going to have enough tubes to get her through the whole of the parkour. So ended up having to go back down to the town to then somehow find some tubes, probably go to bed, find some more food, to then come back up again to then do the parkour. And when I knew that she had done that, the mental strength that it must have taken to have done that is just extraordinary. Mm-hmm. And she did finish, and she finished in time. She finished it. She was a GC finisher. And I just, when you hear stories like that, you know, considering the sort of lack of struggle that we had in that sense, you think, oh God, well, obviously we have to carry on. Obviously there's no question. And that's why it's the stories that come out of the race are amazing. And the kind of mental fortitude it takes to do that and keep going.
So a lot of that stuff is dealing with like emotional aspects of it. Like I did not I had such highs and lows. I've listened to a podcast before where somebody was talking about like trying to manage the highs so your lows aren't as low. And that was it. Like, I went from such a high point doing that parkour to just crashing and being like at rock bottom. And then after I decided to like just carry on, like, I know I was skipping, like, I wasn't going back or anything, but after that, I had, like, the best day of cycling, like, the next 200K or whatever through the Czech Republic, and I just felt amazing, which, considering I had basically not scratched at that point, I was still doing it, even though I was basically, mentally, I was still doing the race. But I just had such a swing in that day, and that's the same for, like, most of my races. I'll go through, like, huge low points where I'm just in tears at the side of the road because, I don't know, my chain came off or something, to then immediately after I start riding again, having like the best hour or 2 hours of my life on my bike. And yeah, there's a lot of trying to balance that.
That is so interesting. You've actually given me quite a like spiritual nugget to think about in relation to ultra racing, because like, I mean, you talk about that in life, managing the highs and the lows, like, and extreme highs, you know, in relation to lows are like quite connected. So I've just never like thought of that. And also, well, you're blowing my mind right now. Sorry.
As well, when I did a race last year, and I got to a point where it's like the furthest into an ultra race I'd ever got. It was like so close to the finish. And I got to this part of Ireland where I really wanted to get to. It was like absolutely gorgeous scenery. And I just had to stop at the side of the road just to basically cry because I was just so happy. And also the weather was amazing. But I got to this amazing scenery. I was doing really well in the race. I was just so proud of myself. And yeah, it's sort of a sort of almost spiritual, like just part of me just sort of like came out, just how I felt with just that I'd done that and that my body had taken me on this amazing journey.
Amazing. Okay, it is now hype corner time. We are going to, because this podcast episode is going to come out in February during a time when applications for TCR10 have been extended for underrepresented groups. So hopefully we have some listeners who are interested in TCR number 10. What would you say to somebody who is on the edge of applying to get to that place where they do believe in themselves enough to get to the start line, to give it a go, to put their hat into the ring of applications?
Obviously, it's right to have a good enough like confidence on your bike. And I wouldn't say if you've just started cycling and you've got no background at all, like maybe don't do TCR. But if you've got that, you know, if you've got that grounding and you're curious, because I think that's the main word for me. If you're curious, because if without the curiosity, you're probably not going to enjoy the process. Because I think, wasn't it Mike Cole himself said it's like an experiment. You're kind of just experimenting with what you can do. And that's like part, that's why you do it, to explore. So yeah. Sign up to find out what you can do.
Amazing. Yeah, and I absolutely agree with that. And perhaps also we should be framing this question that if there's anyone out there who thinks they know someone who should be throwing their hat in the ring, what can you do to try and persuade that person that they can do it?
For sure.
Because actually, I think in my experience, and it sounds like in some other, I mean, Gail as well.
Absolutely.
It is about the people around you who believe in you.
You need sometimes that little push out the door, don't you? You need that somebody to tap you on the shoulder and go, have you thought about this? Because, you know, you cycle a long way. And,
and I certainly, you know, it sort of almost annoys me that Joe was always so relaxed about it. He was like, obviously you can do it. And it's almost annoying that he was right. In the sense that, you know, it really did take him to have so much faith in me as someone who's ridden probably the most with me than anyone. And it does take those other people around you to really give you that push. And I would just say that, what have you got to lose? Just give it a go and see what happens. And as we say, if you get to the end or you don't, you'll have some kind of experience and some kind of story to tell.
and you'll certainly be better off for that.
Cara, do you have any hope to deliver us?
I mean, I can't give you any sort of like accomplishment for getting to the end, but just the adventure aspect of any race like this, especially the TCR, and it's just, you're seeing places every day that you've never seen before. That's what keeps you going, is that I didn't see a single thing twice. There's no, like if you're going for a ride at home, you go out and back, and you've done that, you've done rows on that every single day. On the TCR, it's like, that's what got me up in the morning. It's like, I'm going to be seeing something completely new to me today. Mm-hmm. And the next hour after that, I'm going to see something new. And maybe I'll see it again, maybe I won't, it doesn't matter. I'm not going to have to see it again that day, hopefully.
Unless you have to do the hills twice, which actually there were a couple.
Exactly. But yeah, it's just, everything's new, and it's an absolutely incredible experience.
Yeah, when else do you get that new every hour, to you every hour, and for days?
Yeah, and it's your body doing it. Mm. It's all under your own power, and you can... That's just an amazing, just to be able to say that I did that. Even if you don't get to the end, you did that day, or you pushed through the night then, or you overtook that person, or something like that. It's... Yeah.
Or climb that mountain range.
You climb that mountain range.
And then went down the other side.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's about making the memories.
Amazing.
And yeah, no matter how far into the race you get, most of the people around you aren't even going to have like remotely thought about being able to do something like that.
Yeah.
None of my family would have been able, like, thought about doing something like that. None of my friends back home sort of really cycled, or cycled more than 50K or something like that. So just doing like one of those days just to other people, if you're one of those people who like some sort of like admiration from friends going like, wow, that was incredible, you get that. People will be impressed with you.
For the just some incredulity about the whole thing. Yeah, I think most people actually don't fully grasp it.
Yeah.
But I probably should also say, from my perspective of having done this as a pair and loved the fact that I was doing it as a pair for all sorts of reasons, you think about what person could be the right person for you. It is an experience, and it is such an adventure. And actually, if you don't feel comfortable doing it on your own, consider who that other person could be who you could then do this adventure with.
Super special experience.
Yeah. Well, thank you to all three of you for all of your stories and sharing your experiences and being on the podcast today.
Well, thank you so much
for having us,
Taylor.
Thank you for inviting me.
It's been a huge privilege. And also, I think we probably should say, if anyone does have questions or wants to reach out or is thinking about it, please do reach out.
Certainly, really?
I think to all three of us, everyone's nodding. So,
yes.
Consent.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Thanks, guys.
That was awesome.
Studio audience.
There's
so much more, though.
I know.
Literally, like, I keep all those stories. So I'm like, oh, I didn't see about that. Or like, how did you
make it? I know, but also something that you didn't pop up.
And that concludes our two-part series with Gail Brown, Cara Dixon, and Katie Moss. As you heard, they each have such different experiences of the TCR, from riding as a committed pair to dealing with a scratch and all of the things that come up in between and along the way when taking on a challenge like the TCR. Past experience, preparedness, smart decision-making, staying safe, and answering the call to do your absolute best all come together as key themes that shape your race adventure. I hope that you felt inspired by these riders' stories and have gained some insight into what your TCR journey could look like if you're considering racing yourself. We've gone from having one woman sign up at the very first edition of the TCR to 43 who signed up for TCR number 9 last year. So we know we are seeing progress, but we also know that there's more work to do. As always, please share this podcast with any women or anyone else who you think might be inspired by listening to it. Let's lift each other up and make sure our sport and our community is a welcoming one for all, which I know the Lost Dot community absolutely is. If you're looking for other ways to support us and give back to the community, we are still looking for on-race and at-home volunteers for what is guaranteed to be a memorable year, with the 10th edition of the Transcontinental Race happening this July. Volunteering is an amazing way to get more familiar with the spirit of the race and its inner workings, and gives an exclusive glimpse into how it all comes together. It's a wonderful learning experience if you want to get involved but maybe aren't quite ready to race, are taking a break from racing, or just want to support. It guarantees your spot on next year's race, and if you take on an on-race volunteer position, you are put up in the beautiful control point locations during your time and given a daily stipend. We still need a full roster of volunteers at the start in Roubaix, at CP1 in Slovenia, at CP2 in Bosnia, CP3 in Kosovo, CP4 in Northwest Turkey, and at the finish in Istanbul. More information can be found on our website and social media channels. I will leave you all with the inspiration you've just heard to let it soak in. I hope you've enjoyed this two-part episode of Women Who Race, and I will be back soon to bring you more stories. Thank you so much for your support.
Mountain high, ocean deep, heart so wild, can't be beat. A way to find the light. Mountain high, ocean deep, heart so wild.